The new appearance, the grand halls of the palace, luster with golden light, as chandeliers cast dancing murk on the marble bottoms. Retainers moved hastily, preparing for the evening's fete, an event meant to showcase the area's wealth and power. Amara, the youthful son of the king, paced still behind the velvet curtains of the great hall. Unlike the other miladies adorned in silk and jewels, her studies were far from the spangling festivity. She endured for freedom beyond the palace walls, a life where her choices signified. Her aspect caught the entrance just as a new face stepped through the ornate doors, a youthful man, altitudinous and composed, with eyes that held both riddle and warmth. He was Sir Elias, lately appointed as the palace's principal counsel, brooded to be as wise as he was handsome. Their eyes met compactly, a spark kindling between them amid the ocean of patricians. Unknown to Amara, this meeting was a morning of a story that would challenge tradition, duty, and the walls erected around their hearts. Secrets and murk days passed, and Amara set up herself drawn to Sir Elias more frequently than she anticipated. Their hassles, originally formal and distant, grew warmer with each stolen discussion in the palace auditoriums or quiet library alcoves. Elias was not only intelligent but kind, and beneath his composed surface lay stories of difficulty and immolation. Amara participated her own dreams of a life beyond the golden pen of kingliness. Yet, their growing bond was shadowed by palace conspiracy. Rumors spread of conspiracies and power struggles, and the king's councils watched the brace with cautious eyes. Interdicted passions tangled with duty as Amara and Elias navigated a world where love could be both a retreat and a trouble. One evening, beneath the gleam of a full moon, Elias confessed his heart. "Amara, you're the light in this palace. I would risk everything to be by your side." She smiled, hope blowing despite the troubles ahead. The days that followed Elias' concession were filled with both joy and dread. Every regard they participated in the corridors, every word passed by whispers, sutured a secret shade of love, one that grew more insolvable to conceal with each thread. The palace was a maze of eyes and cognizance, and dubitation was rising. Amara began to notice the subtle changes. Her lady, in waiting Celine, no longer smiled as brightly. Lord Werrick, the High Chamberlain and a loyal rightist, dallied too long when Elias entered the room. The queen, her mama, summoned her more constantly, asking pointed questions about her studies on duty, honor, and fidelity. And also came the process. Elias was to appear before the royal council. The charge suspected disloyalty, rumored alliances with foreign courts, and, most ruinous of all, overdue influence over the queen. Amara's blood ran cold when she heard. She stormed into the council chamber just as the allegations were read. "This is madness," she cried, her voice echoing against the gravestone pillars. "He's pious, further than utmost in this room." The king, seated on his high throne, did ent rise. His aspect was heavy as he looked at his son. "Amara," he said gently, "this matter goes beyond passions. The area is restless. The people mutter. I cannot allow sentiment to guide the fate of the realm. But if justice bends a sweat, also what kind of area are we?" she challenged. Elias remained silent, his head bowed. The council didn't doom him also. Rather, they gave him a choice, exile or silence. Vanish still or be tried intimately. The escape that night, Amara stole into the auditoriums where Elias awaited. His hands quivered as he touched her face. "I would ent let them destroy you because of me," he rumored. "And I would ent let them abolish you for my life," she replied. They had no choice. With help from a sympathetic guard and Amara's maid, they planned their escape. A carriage, hidden under the cloak of night, a forged trip decree, gold coins wrapped in linen. It was hopeless, foolish, and it was their only chance. They left before dawn, hearts pounding, murk in pursuit. For days, they traveled by disguise, passing through townlets and timbers toward the seacoast. Amara, for the first time, tasted a life without titles. She washed clothes in a swash, participated chuck, with goat herds, and slept under stars of Elias beside her. Their love strengthened without the weight of palace walls. But freedom had a cost. The betrayal, it was in a quiet harborage city that treason struck. Celine, who had helped them escape, had been constrained. Her family hovered. She had passed their route to Lord Werrick. They came with brands drawn and letters of royal decree. Elias fought, but he was outnumbered. Amara screamed as they dragged him down. "You have a choice," Lord Werrick said, his voice like ice. "Return to your station, princess, and your cherish will be spared. Repel, and he dies for his disloyalty." She goggled at him, pulsing. "What kind of area punishes love?" He didn't answer. The trial back in capital. The palace was in uproar. News of Amara's exposure and return spread like campfire. The trial of Sir Elias drew crowds to the yard gates. Amara contended with her father. "Let me speak. Let them see verity." The king, jaded and worn, eventually allowed it. On the day of judgment, Amara stood before patricians and commoners likewise. "You call this disloyalty," she said, her voice clear. "But what has Sir Elias done but love me? You sweat him because he reminds you of what power cannot control the heart." Murmurs stirred in the crowd. She turned to the council. "This area needs further than laws. It needs compassion. I do not deny our love. I embrace it. And if you would discipline him, also discipline me, too. I'll not be a poppet. Queen." The silence was blaring. Also the king rose. The king's mercy, he looked at Elias, also at his son. "There was a time," he said sluggishly, "when I loved a woman the court disapproved of. I chose a throne, rather. And I've lived with that remorse every day." He broke. "I'll not chain my son with the same mistake." The council erupted in kick, but the king held up his hand. "Sir Elias will be executed. His title is stripped, but he's free to live wherever he chooses with whom he chooses." Amara ran to Elias, gashes falling freely. Their kiss, before the court, was hidden this time. The morning a commodity knew months latterly. In a cabin by the ocean, Amara and Elias began a new chapter. She had renounced her claim to the throne, choosing a simpler life. The people called her the princess who chose love, and songs were sung of their story. But they didn't live for legend. They woke with sun on their faces and horse laugh in their home. They participated stories by the fire and danced barefoot in the beach. Elias wrote books of gospel, and Amara tutored children from the vill. And in time, a child was born to them, a son with her mama's eyes and her father's heart. Her name was Lyra, and she'd grow up knowing that love was worth fighting for. Epilogue: the legacy times passed, and the area changed. The old king failed, and his son, Amara's family, ruled with a gentler hand. He visited Amara frequently, seeking her counsel, and Elias's ideas began to impact the court from hence. Their love, formerly interdicted, had reshaped the veritably heart of the realm, and in a palace once ruled by Murk, golden light now shone a little brighter.